This is the One Piece Podcast, episode 811 for the week of Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024. My name is Ed.
And my name is Sam.
And Sam, primarily on this episode, we're going to be doing a triple anime recap for the last three anime episodes. I think we skipped a week in there, too, at some point. So this is the last month's worth of anime episodes that we're going to be going over. Do you have what those episodes are in front of you?
I have, let's see, it's 1097 is The Will of Ohara, Inherited Research. 1098 is The Eccentric Dream of a Genius. Mm. One whole sentence. And 1099, Preparations for Interception, Rob Lucci Strikes.
He certainly does. So that's what we'll be doing on this episode. Next week, however, we're going to have a volume recap for the most recent volume that came out in Japan. I should know what that is, but volume 108 recap. 108. There we go. But so that's pretty much all, and that'll take us through, I think, the rest of the hiatus, hopefully. And
The manga's on the 3-week break now.
Yep. And one other thing I should mention at the top of the show is we are going to be live at the City Winery in New York City on April 14th. I'll be there. Zach will be there. I think a few other people will be there as well. Mike Patton, friend of the show, as well as some others. But tickets are available now. So that's April 14th at 3 p.m. Please check it out. I haven't been to New York City in like over a decade. So I'm going to stay right in the middle of everything and see how well it goes for me. Come say hi. All right. That's all I've got for an intro. But Sam, do you want to get right into the anime recap?
Let's-a-go.
All right.
Hey guys, Tara Sands here from the 4Kids Flashback Podcast. Now, if you're listening to this podcast, this is something you're going to want to know about. May 10th through 12th, there is a convention called the NostalgiaCon in San Antonio, Texas, where they are having the biggest 4Kids reunion you've ever seen. You can go there, meet us, buy autographs, and hang out and all that stuff. Here is the list of who's going to be there, and they are still adding people every day. Okay, I'm reading down from their website. Veronica Taylor, Eric Stewart, Dan Green, Wayne Grayson, Lisa Ortiz, Michael Hagney, Tara Sands, that's me, Darren Dunstan, Megan Hollingshead, Mark Thompson, Jason Page, Amy Birnbaum, Greg Abbey, Ted Lewis, Rachel Lillis, Lee Quick, Matthew Sussman, Stuart Zagnett, Tony Salerno, Jonathan Todd Ross, and those are just the 4Kids guests. There's a slew of other guests you can meet. So go to thenostalgiacon.com and get yourself to San Antonio. We'll see you there.
Hi, I'm Steve Yerko.
And I'm Tara Sands. Now available from Maji Media is our new podcast, 4Kids Flashback. 4Kids is the company who brought you the English dub of Pokemon in the late 90s and so many other shows like Yu-Gi-Oh!, Shaman King, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Kirby, the infamous One Piece dub, and so many more.
We'll be talking to the people who worked at 4Kids. Actors, directors, writers, editors, producers, engineers, you get the point. And hopefully get the answers to questions both you and I have about the company.
I actually worked there as a voice actor on some of the shows.
And I was a kid watching the shows and remember way more than Tara does.
And thank God for that. Steve is actually a professional storyboard artist, which gives some really unique insights into anime and animation. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. That's the number 4Kids Flashback.
This is the triple anime recap for episodes 1097 through 1099. I'm your host Sam, and today with me, you're genuinely never gonna guess this. There's a million people it could be. You're not. It's not the one you're thinking. We have Ed.
Thank you, Sam. You know, most weeks, like people, like we go on for a long time on the manga recap, and people can be forgiven for forgetting. But it's literally just me, and I opened the show this week, and it's only you and me. So I really hope nobody is surprised. But it's good to be back on the anime recap. It's, I find myself enjoying the anime, even in its slower weeks, more and more these days, because I can reliably count on there being about 17 and a half minutes of genuine content here. And even when it's slow, it kind of breezes right by.
Yeah. Episode. So up first, we have episode 1097, The Will of O'Hara, Inherited Research. And we open on O'Hara itself, West Blue, 22 years ago, fresh after the catastrophe, after the tragic bombing of the Buster Call. And in the wasteland, in the desert wasteland left over, we see a funny-looking cactus. Oh, wait, that's not a cactus. That is a young, quote-unquote young, Vegapunk. Back when he had his full head, not just full head of hair, the whole rest of his head is there, and it goes up. It's like a very tall, like kind of bulbous-shaped, Bonnie calls it
like a light bulb. Yeah, like Rudolph.
Later. Is that the idea? Has that been the idea the whole time?
He's, I don't know, Rudolph the Giant Brain Man.
And his hair hasn't turned gray yet, so it's like he just looks like a brown, fuzzy cactus from certain angles.
His size is slightly confusing to me. Like, when they do that thing with the light bulb in the later episode, he's, like, roughly a little bit bigger than Jinbei. But, I mean, I guess it's him talking. He says, oh, I was almost the size of a giant back then. I'm like, no, the fuck you weren't.
Like, sometimes he's, like, shorter than Luffy, and other times he's, like twice as tall as Luffy.
I mean, yeah, he does tower over Luffy at a couple points in these episodes.
Yeah, I'm not sure what kind of a funny little old man, what kind of little he is.
He's a funny little man if you're Whitebeard, I suppose.
You know, Vegapunk's thinking to himself as he's looking at the sort of dried up lake full of books. He's saying, you know, good job protecting those books, you know, civilians of O'Hara. This is a victory. And Vegapunk sees a crew of giants who have tasked themselves, it seems, with rounding these books up in big nets. And some familiar faces, like Haruden and Gerd, the little blonde giant girl from Big Mom's flashback.
This whole episode has a sort of an air of calm around it. It's It's interesting to see O'Hara, how bombed out and desolate it is after this, but you know, it sort of it leads into a good emotional place. I think this episode it's an episode for taking your time and sort of just telling the story, because this is a shocking revelation. Granted, we've all read it. Well, most of us have read it in the manga prior to this, but just seeing the devastation, letting that sink in, and you know, the sort of the scale of the government's crime here is, you know, it's instructive.
Yeah, and there's also that one giant with like the orange hair bowl cut thing.
I think his name is Goldberg.
Goldberg, that's it.
The goalie. That's what I was looking
for. And over Vegapunk's shoulder, a voice appears. Not a familiar voice, because it's not a Monkey D. Dragon's usual voice actor, because I guess they wanted him to sound younger.
Yeah.
Because the current guy they got...
It's, ..
He sounds like he's going to go any day now.
Really? That's a shame.
Present
that's,
day dragon.
That's, God, it's,
Yeah, him and like Frankie's voice actor are like,
oh boy,
like, oh man, you guys, your voices are just going to go soon.
Yeah, Frankie's voice actor. I didn't realize Akio Otsuka. I mean, he's got to be pretty old at this point, but that's too bad. I really liked him.
Wait, Akio Otsuka?
I'm thinking of Blackbeard. Never mind. Shit, sorry.
Blackbeard is Akio Otsuka. He's as lively as ever, I think.
Yeah, I honestly don't know who Vegapunk's voice actor is.
No, I'm talking about Dragon's voice actor.
Dragon's voice actor, right.
Dragon's present-day voice actor sounds very, very, very old.
Right, right.
And in this flashback, he's like he sounds like a younger man.
I'm going to have to look this up now.
Yeah, so this is Dragon, age 33, and we get the title card telling us that this is Vegapunk, 43. They discuss the disinformation campaign going around against Professor Clover. The government's been trying to paint him as somebody trying to destroy the world. But they both know the truth. They know his real character.
Okay, so the original actor is, the original actor is Hidekatsu Shibata, and he is 87 years old.
They're talking about the giant. They refer to the bandaged person as the captain of the giants. I don't know how literal that is, but there's a suspiciously familiar bandaged up giant who seems to be kind of spearheading the whole rescue the books from the lakes mission.
He's a very distinctive silhouette, even among giants.
They place some flowers down at a makeshift grave for the people of O'Hara. They just like took like a big chunk of tree bark from that tree, and they stuck it in the ground. They etched O'Hara into it and put flowers down there. And they're talking about how, you know, dragons, he's gathering up his new gang, his revolutionary army. And Vegapunk, despite the two of them seeming to have a rapport, Vegapunk won't be joining the revolutionaries because he needs funding. He needs resources. He needs the stuff that only the government can give him.
Yeah. Well, Dragon is so offended by the government's crime here, just the destruction of people who are looking for knowledge or looking for truth. And, you know, it's not a step too far for Vegapunk. He's so, I don't know, he's got that, the sort of the narcissism of genius, believing that his discoveries are so important and so vital to the world, and also so important to him. He derives his sense of self from them, I think.
Yeah, yeah. He feels like whatever good he can do to the world, he can do more of it with on the government's dollar.
He couldn't live with himself if he didn't do it, you know, just on principle. If he wasn't, you know, if he was able to do it and didn't do it, I don't think he would, you'd never forgive himself.
And yeah, so Dragon's making his big, you know, the triumphant music's playing. Dragon's kind of going into a speech about, you know, how they have to stop the government. They can't allow this kind of injustice to continue. The little narration and the stage lights are filling us in that this is shortly before Dragon would join forces with Bartholomew Kuma and Emporio Ivankov. And we come back to the present, and the Straw Hats are all different kinds of impressed, right? Usopp's like, oh, did you say Elbaf? Did you mention Giants of Elbaf? And Nami seems to be impressed by Dragon's passion as a revolutionary, as just a passionate person. And Robin, she's putting two and two together. She's putting one plus one together. She's asking Shaka, like, hey, that person you were talking about, that was Jaguar D. Saul, wasn't it? And Shaka, he doesn't like outright confirm it. He's just like, we have to keep his location a secret for now. But, you know, you get it. You get it. And Robin's like crying her happy tears. So basically Vegapunk went at some point after this visit to O'Hara. Vegapunk did visit Elbaf and visited their libraries to read all the, because they're not going to keep the O'Hara books anywhere that the government can reach them. So they're staying safe on Elbaf. And Vegapunk visited, read all the books, all the information stored in his head. You see the silhouette of Saul in that library, like basically pointing Vegapunk.
You know, they all but show his face. They basically show his whole face, except for like part of it's in shadow. But like, you know who it is.
Yeah, you can tell by the. Does he have his hat? His like cowboy hat and his like big kind of scruffy,
big beard mullet thing. Yeah.
And then the Straw Hats' magnet boots start dragging them across the floor and into a different room. And that brings us to the eye catch. Back at the scrapyard, Luffy is flying around with his new rocket shoes. He's like, oh, look at me, guys. I'm just like Sanji. And this is where Bonnie's asking Vegapunk about his head. Like, hey, what's up, old man? Last time I saw you, your head was big and like a light bulb. And yeah, this is where Vegapunk's making some crack. It's like, oh, last time you would have saw me, I was probably as tall as a giant. But he mentions that so the question is, what happened to your head? And then Vegapunk says, it was getting long, so I cut it. And then Bonnie's like, don't just say that, like, you just got a haircut.
I mean, basically he did.
So casually.
They have the flashing part, like, where his real head was supposed to be. That goes on for a little while. It's just...
Yeah, like, as Vegapunk is expositing, we get this kind of after image of what his head would look like if he still had it.
There's a lot of expositing, a lot of Vegapunk expositing in this episode. And although they do add some levity. There is a little bit of lightness here after all that sad stuff in the first half.
So Vegapunk explains that the reason his head is so big is because he ate the brain. But then he like bites his tongue.
Yeah, he's so excited. He's
always keeping that thing out.
Yeah.
It's I guess brain fruit is hard to say in Japanese, and his tongue is just so ready to be bitten.
You get the explanation Punk Records too.
Yeah, he cut his head off, and it basically his brain is in like Punk Records, the big giant like central egg, of which like if you look at it from below the island, you can read kind of the ceiling under the crack of it, where it says Punk Records. And the apple part is like an antenna that's allowing him to like always be communicating with his giant remote brain.
Yeah.
And his clones, his satellites, are all different facets of him, and they all once a day they all like kind of sync up their data, their information, so they all have access to the same brain, basically.
This is kind of done in like clip art vision. Like his excited description of it is all done in clip art.
Yeah,
it's just another way of saving on animation. This episode, this is a pretty static episode.
So Vegapunk's dream basically is he wants to share Punk Records with the world. Like everything he reads, he remembers, and it gets stored in this central location. And he's devising a strategy to, allow everybody to basically have an antenna to it, is sort of the idea. He's describing a very One PC version of the internet. And Jinbei is like, I know about the internet. I know sometimes people get ideas up in there. So Jinbei just very cynically is like, well, what if ideology gets in the mix of this like big central brain hub? And Vegapunk just kind of like brushes it off like, if we worry about that, then we can never advance science. But you've probably got a point, but whatever. And then that kind of sets Bonnie off because she's like, hey, your selfish pursuit of science has enabled all these terrible things to happen, including my father being turned into a cyborg. And she's like readying to get her revenge on Vegapunk by grabbing like a lightsaber thing, a laser sword beam thing, to threaten him. And Vegapunk tries to warn her like, hey, you know that beam is defective. It's not actually like a laser. And then before he can finish, it's too late because the swarms of insects are already coming because that's what the beam actually does. It just attracts bugs. And Bonnie is comically afraid of bugs.
And conveniently unconscious for the rest of the next couple episodes.
She passes out. She's conveniently unconscious for the next couple episodes. Luffy doesn't seem to like recognize that she's not waking up anytime soon because he's like, hey, Bonnie, check out this great stag beetle I found. And he spends like the whole episode just kind of like holding on to this very like friendly looking stag beetle.
And when they see him on the monitor in the next episode, he's still holding it.
Yeah. And then Vegapunk's like, oh yeah, this is an appropriate time to ask. I heard you guys were in Wano recently. Did you guys hear about this second dragon that isn't Kaido? And then Luffy's like, oh yeah, you know that guy. Momonosuke. He's great. And Vegapunk's like, oh, well, I developed that synthetic devil fruit. That would have been the thing that Momonosuke accidentally ate on Punk Hazard.
It does explain why it doesn't have all the negative side effects of Caesar's devil fruits.
Yeah, it's not a smile fruit. It's probably a more advanced.
But it's a complete failure.
As a synthetic fruit.
It's a complete failure because the dragon was the wrong color.
Right.
This is probably the funniest moment of these episodes. I thought this was
really funny. Yeah, like Dr. Brief.
The stereo the speakers.
The stereo speakers. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I thought of. It's like, no, it's not finished yet. We can't let you into space. It's like, oh man, what kind of terrible technological hurdle must we cross? He's like, I just can't get the position of these speakers right. Just can't get the color of the animal right.
Yeah. He breathes fire, and that's good enough for Luffy.
And Vegapunk cries over this failure, and Jinbei's is like, "Oh, well, that's a perfectionist for you."
Giant slamming his face into the trash pile as a way of apologizing.
to himself, really.
Right, yeah.
And then the conversation turns to the big Iron Giant, which I guess is what we're going to be calling it colloquially. That's a hard word for me.
I've been calling him Robonosuke. I think Luffy calls him that in the next episode.
Yeah, Luffy calls him Robonosuke.
I hope that catches on. I like that, yeah.
And then they most commonly refer to it as the Iron Giant.
Mm-hmm. Superman.
And so we learned a few episodes ago that the Iron Giant was made during the Void Century, but it in particular also has a history of having attacked Mary Joa sometime 200 years ago.
When the Ryugu Kingdom joined the world government.
Hmm.
Hmm.
And,
Wait, that's in the next episode. Sorry.
Yeah, so the we finished the episode off with a government ship arriving, and it's CP0. They're all here. They're all wearing their eyes wide shut masks. They're like, "We are here. We're under orders to kill Vegapunk. To be continued." And then for the little post credits, "Hey children, gather around. Here's a history lesson for you."
Mm-hmm.
Bit. It's not Robin and Chopper anymore. It's now Lilith and Edison, because Lilith hijacked it the episode before.
Oh, that's right. I hadn't thought about that in a while.
Yeah, I don't really pay too close attention to them, but I did write down that this week they talked about Monkey D. Dragon.
I mean, I can see why these are necessary, and I don't mind. I don't mind that they're there.
No.
Yeah,
I like them.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 1098: The Eccentric Dream of a Genius. And this is where Luffy starts talking about Robonosuke. Apparently, the government had ordered Robonosuke's destruction to happen, but scientific curiosity was too strong. So Vegapunk has been harboring it privately. He's like, "Yes, obviously the government can't know that. Like, I still have it. Like, it's supposed to be. We're supposed to put it in the smelting pot."
Yeah, I wonder how destructible it is, even when it's not powered. Is it just iron you could melt down? I'm curious. No, there's a lot of questions.
Can you Terminator 2 it?
Right.
Shaka is explaining to the other part of the crew basically all the same information, and even mentions that the Vega Force 1 that Lilith was piloting earlier, the Gigantor-looking robot, was modeled after this same Iron Giant. But they can't seem to replicate its technology, and we're still not entirely clear what's so special about this technology that is so exclusive to this thing or this previous kingdom.
I gotta say one other thing I've been enjoying in this episode, I think in particular in this one, where Vegapunk gets his own Super Friends Love American style heart shaped transition.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little thing, but I find it amusing.
Luffy tells Vegapunk, he's like, "Oh yeah, Bonnie was mad at you, so you should be on your knees and groveling for forgiveness." And Vegapunk's like, "You don't even know like what our history is. You don't even know why you're saying this." Then Vegapunk's like, "Oh yeah, and here's the time to bring this up. Please take me off of Egghead. I need a ride."
Yeah, the government's getting wise.
Yes, and appropriately, we cut to CP0 facing off with all the sea beast cyborgs that hang out at the around the oceans of Egghead, and they shoot one of the beasts down while calling into Egghead and asking for permission. Like, "Hey, we're CP0. We're asking for you to let us in. That shouldn't be a problem, right, Vegapunk?"
It's a problem.
Yeah, one of the agents is like, "Oh yeah, by the way, Captain Lucci or whatever his rank is, Director Lucci. I guess is Spandam still director, or is he a different role?"
I think Spandam's part of CP0. I don't like.
Yeah, he was in Film Gold, but he's
right. But he's. It's not. It's just sort of. I assume they take orders from the Five Elders. If there's even like a commanding officer or anything, I don't know.
They're like, oh, but we saw the Julie Bonnie in the area. And then Lucci's like, okay, well, we don't need her anymore. So if we see her, we're killing her too. So that's interesting. What did they previously need her for, huh?
Yeah.
And Lilith thinks it's cool that CP0's here. She's like, hey, we're part of the government. We're evil, right? Like that's my feeling. That's my feeling I get to project onto other people.
It's all you talk about, Lilith. It's kind of tiresome. You're evil. We get it.
But she's a fun kind of evil.
Yeah,
she doesn't really mean it.
That's true. It comes in handy.
We cut to Kamabaka Queendom, where the revolutionaries are, like, they have Kuma like plugged up into this, I guess, like outside hyperbolic time chamber or like healing chamber thing. And Kuma is like, you know, waking up. He's like, oh, my daughter's in trouble. I have to, you know, but he's not like fully conscious yet. He's just kind of like his body's moving on its own, tearing himself out of the plugs and like trying to run to the shore and kind of stumbling and getting up while the revolutionaries are trying to stop him. But they can't because Kuma's got the papa powers. He can just poof himself away. And now he's flying through the sky on his way to Egghead, it seems, or wherever he was going.
Sorry, I wanted to go back to one thing first. The idea of like the free energy, what powers the Iron Giant for like the energy from the 200 years ago, or from the 900 years ago, whenever it was created. That's like one of the great conspiracy, like real life conspiracy, like technologies, like people who claim to have invented free energy, like it just broadcasts out into the air and it powers everything for free. Like people who, you know, quacks who are working on this, who are being silenced by the government and the establishment. You know, it's, you know, nothing's ever been shown that it could possibly work, but it's one of the great, quack technologies that people are in search of on, you know, if you ever used to listen to Coast to Coast AM, you probably heard people talk about it a lot.
Well, good thing nobody's ever heard about the sun.
Right? If only we could somehow convert that with panels of some kind into, that'll never work.
Yeah, and this is the scene now where Vegapunk is kind of rambling on about his utopia, this infinite energy that he's looking to harness, you know, and Jinbei just like has to be very cynical about basically every one of Vegapunk's daydreams. Like, hey, if somebody did have a way of producing energy the way you say, you know, that's the thing people go to war over, you know, like that's not. It's never that simple. And Vegapunk is just like, well, I mean, think about it. There is technically energy everywhere. There's available opportunities to make energy as long as you know how to harness them efficiently. Mm-hmm. And Luffy's response to all this is basically like, you know, I dig the altruism. Like, I understand and think it's cool that you want to help the world and stuff. But like I gotta put my foot down. I don't want to look like a hero. I gotta look out for me and my boys and girls and whoever feeds me, and whoever you know just kind of makes me laugh a little bit. I'll protect those people. But you know,
yeah. I just love the way they do that though, because Vegapunk is again off in his dream world of. Like it's extremely cartoony and very whimsical looking, and he finishes and he's in like the Captain Morgan pose, you know, from the liquor, not from the pirate, with the big foot up. Science will get us there someday, and he's twinkling and sparkling, and Luffy's picking his nose, and it's a perfect transition. It's sort of illustrate what kinds of people, different kinds of people these guys are.
Yeah, because like Vegapunk,
and it's all Luffy, neon and
they're not
neon
like crazy different in yeah. their like. You know, they have their kind of selfish vices that they have to be true to. Mm-hmm. And that's part, you know, that's at once like, you know, one of their weaknesses, but also like one of the reasons why they are capable of as much as they are. And a big explosion interrupts their conversation. And then Vegapunk's like, oh yeah, that thing I was mentioning earlier where I wanted you to take me away. This is why. Because CP0 is attacking the city. Dun, 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 to be continued.
Yeah.
And then the Post-credits, Lilith and Edison conversation. This time is about Emporio Ivankov, because he got brought up earlier in the episode. And then 1099, preparations for interception. Rob Lucci strikes. And so CP0, they're requesting S-Bear to use his, I guess S-Bear has the simulated pawpaw powers. So you can send all the CP0 agents flying onto the island, which I guess is a flashback to explain how we got to the explosion. Or no, the explosion was
the explosion,
like,
is
know,
the ship,
the sea beast.
Yeah, the ship is being blown up.
So they let their ship explode, but they basically teleported themselves safely onto the island.
These sea beasts are slow on the uptake. They see this whole thing happen, and everyone's gone like, well, I guess it's too late. Just destroy the ship, I suppose.
Yeah, Vegapunk knows it's CP0 coming after him, and Luffy is confused because he surprisingly remembers CP9, but he's like, I don't know. I think you got your numbers wrong, old man. When somebody said CP previously to me, it was with a 9, not a 0. So, reevaluate your notes, I suppose. The citizens of Egghead are confused because they're like, oh, this is Cypherpole, but aren't Cypherpole known for wearing black suits? Like, what's the super special white suits about?
The only person who's really excited right now is Kaku. Everyone else is either scared or just, Stussy and Lucci are just, they got nothing going on in the face area, but Kaku is just...
They're all wearing masks.
Well, they're so with the masks
they,
on,
they
but
can't
like,
really express much.
Kaku's
outside of
Kaku's excitement is palpable. He's freaking out. He's becoming more like Usopp.
So back in the lab, Shaka's like telling Pythagoras, like, "Hey, warn the island. This is an emergency situation. Bring out the Seraphim and let Sentomaru lead them." So we can expect Sentomaru to show up and be on Vegapunk's side. It seems.
Yeah, all the
Vegapunk is Vegapunk or Sentomaru known for being Vegapunk's bodyguard.
Right. And the Seraphim all get Power Ranger introductions or Sentai introductions here.
Yeah. Yeah. S-Hawk, S-Snake, and S-Shark. And just very, very blatantly, like, S-Snake is just the one white one of them.
Hold on. I've got it playing in the background. I didn't really notice that.
Yeah, like the group shot. Like, it's like egregious, actually.
I wasn't looking for that, I guess.
I mean, like, it's weird because, like, aren't the Seraphim like already kind of like a weird brown face situation?
Yeah, I think that's supposed to be from like the Lunarian blood, possibly.
But like still, like having like previous non dark skinned characters, like, oh, here's the dark skinned version
right.
of them.
But then having one of them not be is just
right.
Yeah, that doesn't work. And you're right.
Which way, Western man?
Yeah. Oh God. The Seraphim are just children. It's not their fault, unfortunately. It's Vegapunk.
Not their fault. It might be
Vegapunk's fault.
Whoever colored the episode.
Well, I don't know. I would hope it wouldn't be down to one person, but that just means that there was, someone told them to do it that way.
Whoever was in charge of that fill bucket tool.
Right.
Vegapunk tells the crew to take Bonnie above the clouds. And take the vacuum rocket. And Luffy and Chopper think this is a great sounding idea.
And he Nimoy's out of there. Star Trek's out of there.
Just Star Trek's out of there. Back in the city, Kaku takes notice of the big CGI hologram dragon that Atlas was fighting earlier. And Kaku's like, let's not underestimate this magnificent beast. Like he's super immediately respecting the power of this fake dragon. And the grunt agents start shooting at the dragon, but to no avail because obviously it's just a hologram and they pass right through. But Kaku, he's not catching on yet. He's like, the dragon is just that strong. It can't even be, the bullets do nothing to it because it must be a space monster. And so he goes in to fight, starts throwing some Tempest kicks, which also phase right through the hologram. And Stussy, down on the floor, down on the ground, knew it was a hologram. She's like, oh yeah, thing's fake. Don't worry about it.
The dorkening.
Like, well, why would you let me embarrass myself first?
Why not?
Sushi thinks that this place is nostalgic, she says. So she's been here. She's got history with Egghead and the technology. And she's able to explain what the island is doing a little bit too late for Kaku to, you know, make a fool of himself. Yeah, because Kaku's going, it's like, oh, there's Punk Records. I'll just moonwalk up there. And then right as he's about to approach, Stussy's like, oh, hey, Lucci, you know those like two rings, like Saturn-like rings around Punk Records? Oh, yeah, that's a defense system. And Kaku's about to get himself blown out. And then Kaku gets himself blown out and he falls and he's yelling at Stussy.
Kaku livens up this episode. The CP0 gang is usually pretty dour. Not the lightest of people.
Yeah, is this stuff in the manga? Like, is this like whole like comedy routine of Kaku?
Well, I mean, like Kaku has definitely gotten funnier, or he's playing that role more since the beginning of Egghead. We definitely commented on it at the time. I don't remember how exactly it went down, but Kaku is definitely he gets to be the funny man of the group, basically.
I've noticed like a lot of the civilians look like they're pulled right out of like We Love Katamari.
Well, especially with the ones with the heads, yeah. I know what you mean. They kind of look like their faces are screens.
And Atlas comes storming in. You know, like, who's acting more violently than me on Egghead? I can't have that. I can't have destruction that isn't my own. And so she's, you know, angry. She's ready for a fight. Stussy's like, that's a Vegapunk. And Lucci recognizes that, okay, well, she's a Vegapunk. She's my prey. And that brings us to the eye catcher of the episode.
So canonically, she's spinning her arm there for about 2 minutes.
Yeah. In the lab, Sanji's watching the screen like, hey, someone's got to stop that cutie. I think he's talking about Stussy.
I think he just means Atlas is kind of like, you know, cute. Not like cute like a fuzzy thing is cute.
I don't know. Lucci, he's like, he has to get serious. He has to remove his mask. He's
going, oh, you meant Sanji. Persona. Sorry. You meant Sanji. Yes, you're right.
Sanji. Yeah. Sanji.
Yep.
Lucci removes his mask and he prays to flex his cape off or his coat, his cape like coat, his cape like coat.
Crumb crisp coating.
And he goes leopard mode. And just immediately straight into Six King Pistol, blows half of Atlas's face off. Atlas's hair spikes into like a sea urchin shape. Instant defeat. Is one of these civilians voiced by Ikue Otani, like Chopper's actress? She sounds like so similar.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised, but I feel like I hear that sometimes, and I never bother to check. But it could just be that like. There's just people who sound like that. It'd be hard to check
like an extra voice like that, I think.
Yeah, unless you're reading the Japanese credits that might be in there. I don't know.
So, yeah, Luffy and Co. are running. And while they are running with like Bonnie and Arm, they're like, wait a second. We didn't even ask where this vacuum rocket is supposed to be. He didn't tell us. We don't know what it looks like. We don't know what it is. So that plan's kind of shot.
We're only just now thinking to ask.
And the running just brings them right into the scene, right into Lucci versus Atlas.
And, very long-lived dust cloud. Or I guess Atlas's face is constantly, it's still on fire, so there is a lot of smoke. But through the smoke, Luffy sees Lucci.
Yeah, and he's like, what are you doing here, pigeon guy? And then Lucci just like gives a nice dramatic pause. It's a government island. We can be here. And then Luffy just kind of plays right into it. Like, oh, you're right. We're the intruders. That's right. I forget sometimes. And Kaku and Stussy are both like, yo, bro, let's not fight an emperor right now.
You need to get permission for that.
We need permission for that. We don't, you know, we might anger some allies we don't know about, you know. So like let's stay on task. Let's keep with our agenda here. But Lucci's like, I know I'm not supposed to fight. And he like has an ellipses, like, you know, the rest of that sentence is, but I wanna. But I'm gonna.
But Luffy takes that decision out of his hands.
Yeah, Luffy sees Atlas. He notices finally after like standing there for a minute. He sees Atlas destroyed. And Chopper goes to rush to help her, but Chopper's not a robot doctor. He's like, this is more Frankie's territory. And Luffy seems kind of harrowed by this. Like, oh, Frankie's not here. Like, we might not be able to help her in time.
Yeah, so he heaves Bonnie into Jinbei's arms.
Yeah, and he's getting mad. He's like, that girl, that big robot girl gave us food. And that's all I need to start this fight.
He's a bit of a flashback about the food, too.
On that cliffhanger, to be continued. And the little post credits this time is Lilith and Edison talking about Kaku and his history in the story.
Mm-hmm. We do get to see some great clips of Kaku as a giraffe. So him turning himself into a cube, always a good time.
Yep. In case you weren't prepped for that to happen in the story. General thoughts on these three episodes, Ed?
Slow pace. But on the other hand, like, I didn't feel, like I said earlier, I didn't feel like it dragged. I think the first episode got some good emotional moments. I mean, Robin, the thing with Saul really hit, I think, harder in the manga than it did here. But, you know, it's a lot of expository. It's a lot of setting up what the stakes are for Vegapunk and sort of the Straw Hats in particular. And, you know, setting up things for the future with the Iron Giant, but it does require a lot of talking. And I think the end of the third episode really goes a long way towards, you know, things are going to start happening on Egghead now. So we feel that quickening of action. We feel that, that conflict coming in and, yeah, I'm excited to, I've been happy to have Rob Lucci and Kaku and CP0 back in this arc, especially these characters. And Susie and Kaku and Lucci are a welcome addition here, and yeah, we'll see where it goes. But these episodes were a breeze.
Yeah, these episodes were capital F fine. It would have been nice if the next episode was in this recap batch, because that would have been like a cool payoff. The next episode preview looks amazing.
Yes. So it's going to be, I think the Sakuga community needs to be prepared. Well, I mean, I don't want to hype it up too much, but it looked great. It really did.
It looked cool. And like, I think just like a central shortcoming of Egghead, even in the manga, is that there's like a bizarre amount of standing around and talking and exposition, like more so than One Piece normally has, and that's where I think that the anime episodes are gonna suffer the most, because it's like, okay, yeah, we just watched three episodes and it felt like one thing happened.
I mean, I was thinking about this earlier when I was watching them, because I rewatched the first two episodes as well because I had the time, but it feels like they're allowed to have one thing happen per episode.
Yeah, generally that's been the case.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's going back to like in Wano as well, but you know,
it just sort of like leads me to thinking about, like, I was dwelling a lot on like how inelegant a lot of the exposition is. Like, a lot of it's like, oh, I might as well bring this up now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because when else is it gonna organically happen?
Right, but then also things could, you know.
Oda has the conversations don't feel like they're natural progressions of each other.
But then Oda also has the habit of, like, you know, a character will put off until the end of the arc to really reveal something as well. So even if they hint at it,
I mean, like, if it's dramatically interesting, I don't mind that so much. It's just like, you know, like the actual, like, moment to moment needs some variety, needs some turning us on our heads.
Yeah, I will say I should probably look up who Vegapunk's voice actor is, but I think he's done a very good job with his, like, he had to do that thing with, like, you know, the biting his tongue thing, and the way he gets excited talking about, like, his utopia, and when he's on these flights of fancy and the animation gets funky with him, and I think he does that really well.
Yeah, it was the Japanese voice of Rick Sanchez. This is a Vegapunk.
Of course. Yes, we have mentioned that before. That's right.
And Doofenshmirtz on Phineas and Ferb.
Shuhei Sakaguchi.
I don't know what else he's really known for, but he's been a good Vegapunk, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anything else you'd like to say before we go ahead and wrap up the episode?
Wait a second. It's Yohei Tadano. Shuhei Sakaguchi is the voice of Shaka.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Who's can you look up who else Shaka's voice actor does?
Let's see here. He's known for doing let's see. what else? Oh, he was Kawachi in Yakitate Japan. That's the thing that that's what I've known him for. Which is interesting cuz that's a sort of a high energy Osaka Ben character. But he hasn't done a lot that I have seen, honestly. He was Jugo in Naruto. Right, well. Yeah. But yeah, not much else. I know the bread baking anime. People should watch Yakitate Japan. It's a good show. That's all I got.
All right. Thank you, Ed.
Should we round off the show?
We shall.
If you love anime and D&D, check out Warlock. It's the story of me, Nova Ravenwood, a young woman born without magic who forms a pact with a mysterious being for power. Set in a fantasy world of adventure, dragons, and powerful sorcerers, the story unfolds like an anime for your ears.
And don't forget about our muscular hunk of a classmate, me, Ren. Too bad this is audio only, otherwise you could see that I'm flexing my arms off over here.
Are you seriously interrupting the ad? You moron! Sorry, we'll get out of your way.
Wait, hang on. I haven't even told them about my amazing powers. I guess I should describe myself a little bit more first. First thing, I don't wear a shirt.
Thanks, Briar! Join the quest and listen to Warlock wherever you get your podcasts. Or visit warlockpod.com for more information.
Has been the One Piece Podcast, episode 811 for the week of Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024. And on this episode, we had our triple anime recap for episodes 1097, 1098, and 1099. We will be back next week for a SBS volume recap of, was that volume 108, I think I said? Yes, volume 108. And I think that'll be Steven and... I think we call them Team Dark. So I think that's Josh and
Vero
and Brodsky. There we go. Yep. Didn't want to miss anybody. But check that out. And Sam, where can the good people out there find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Lucky Chainsaw, and they can find me on Blue Sky at lcsam.bsky.social.
Cool. I am also on Twitter still. You can contact me there. I'm Edward E. One Piece. I'm just Edward E. on Blue Sky. The podcast can be found at the new and improved onepiecepodcast.com. onepiecepodcast@gmail.com is our email address. Please support us, patreon.com/onepiecepodcast. If you haven't listened to it before, go listen to the Forced to Watch 4Kids series and learn all about the 4Kids version of One Piece. And... let's see, you can subscribe on... Actually, you can go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/onepiecepodcast. There's some interesting stuff on there. You can subscribe on SoundCloud, subscribe on Spotify, iHeartRadio, subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, or call us on our phone number. That's 347-497-MAJI. 347-497-6254. Call anytime for your questions, your comments, your theories. And we are actually trying to put together something to actually get people's voice comments on the show again. Zach is working on it. So hopefully we'll have something to show for that soon. But that's it for the One Piece Podcast. My name is Ed.
And my name is Sam.
Thanks, everybody, for stopping by for an anime recap this week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.